The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Kent Summers in studio today. It'll be good to catch up with Kent, all things around being the new columnist, really. Kent Summers has been here in the Valley longer than me, and there's not many left. 33 years of doing it. So we'll have Kent Summers in on a couple of segments. The first is going to be the process of going about being a columnist in one of the busiest sports markets in America. And the second is leaving the Arizona Cardinals beat, I won't say permanently, but just in a space where what does he see out of the organization now that he can, as the late Joe Gilmartin told me, you can either bring the fly swatter or you can bring the sledgehammer as a columnist. So we will talk with Kent Summers on all things involved on that front. It's also Wednesday, so let's talk to the Lopes. This week, GCU, we're going to have some fun this week with GCU. So GCU says, hey, Brad, we want to do the Havoc story. So the Havocs are this crazy group of kids. It's a lot of fun. It's the best college environment. It's better than ASU, U of A. If you're a Sun Devil, if you're a Wildcat, don't get mad at me. Just send the email and I'll just, you know, toss it off the side. Sorry, it's just a fact that GCU has this crazy environment there. And we'll have GCU Havoc's co-president, Senior Shelby Langston, with us on this week's Talk to the Lopes. As they get going, she's also in the Colangelo School of Business. She is an honors student, so it'll be fun to talk with her on all fronts around GCU. Let's get to our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most with Sagicor Now, and that means through life insurance. Guys, when was the last time you took a good, long, hard look at your personal situation, your family situation? Simply log on, there's no one around, log on, do it online at sagicornow.com. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Kent Summers in about 9 minutes. So the Diamondbacks last night, it wasn't pretty. There's going to be nights during the course of 162 games that you will look back and you will say, wow, that wasn't pretty at all. This was one of those games. The fact that they're able to win in a walk-off on a wild throw from a pitcher past the third baseman, when we get to October and they're in postseason play, it doesn't mean much of anything. It just means it's another one down off the schedule. Facts are they're a game and a half up on Colorado. It was a good night for the Diamondbacks because the Rockies ended up losing. Tonight, last game of the series with the Angels, Clay Buchholz will be on the mound, and the Mariners are in town this weekend. I think the story of the day nationally, I mean, locally, there's some other things I want to get to here in the opening segment, but nationally, the story today is Urban Meyer. Eric, you and I have a sandwich bet, right?
We do.
The sandwich bet is that right now, you, if Urban is brought back.
You misled me in a way. You sort of, in a way, I don't know, coerced me into a unfair trade.
What are you talking about, unfair trade? What are you talking about?
Because after I thought about the bet was Urban Meyer will not be coaching or will be coaching the first game.
Right.
I have him as coaching the first game. You have him as not coaching the first game.
Correct.
I should have known that they're going to be playing Oregon State, which is an easy win.
What are you talking about? Oregon State's a Pac-12 school. What do you mean an easy game?
It's a 9 a.m. It's a 9 a.m. start in Columbus. And it's going to be a blowout, and they don't need Urban Meyer for week one.
I'm feeling really good about this bet.
You should be. You should be.
What do you mean
because
I coerced you?
Clearly, I didn't trick you.
You're implying that...
Clearly, yeah. You knew something that I didn't before the stream show yesterday. And after I did a little research after the stream show, clearly I should have read the same material that you did before the stream show.
And what was that?
It was the big Pete Thamel,
I didn't read Pete Thamel yesterday.
Breakdown of what all they're investigating. And it's funny because you mentioned some of those things exactly from the article. So whatever you read must have been similar to that.
I don't know about that. I don't know if it was Pete Thamel. I didn't read Pete Thamel.
Luckily, it's only a sandwich bet and not a steak dinner bet.
Well, there's some nice sandwich places that I will collect my bet on here in the Valley.
Well, we should find out within the next few hours.
So the trustees are meeting right now. The fact that Clark Kellogg, who comes on this show, is in the meeting, does that mean anything to you? Because we're talking about
Clark Kellogg
is in the meeting.
In a football meeting.
He's in the football meeting. To me, nationally known brand, Clark Kellogg, right? I know he's a basketball guy, but the fact that he is walking in on that meeting, to me, was interesting to see his name and his face as part of the group that was in there deciding the fate of what's going to happen with Urban Meyer. But it's these trustees, and trustees always are looking at, they're going to give that whole academic speech. Is Gene Smith, the AD, the former Arizona State AD, does he get hammered today in this deal? I think that's a very fair question to ask. In Urban Meyer's case, if he gets suspended for Oregon State, so what? To your point, I do agree with you on that. What it says to me, if they do suspend him, is, yeah, he did some things that were wrong. He did lie to the media. He's already admitted to that. He's already apologized for that. I'm not sitting here hammering on Urban Meyer. It's just, if we're trying to make sense of this here in Arizona, and there's a lot of you Buckeye fans out there, you know, that think nothing. We don't see anything. We don't hear anything. Brad, you are picking on us. No, I'm not. Your coach is in the middle of it. So in the Urban Meyer story today, even if he gets out of this and he doesn't get hammered, he doesn't lose his job, I still don't think Ohio State's going to be a playoff team this year. I still think, if you look at the way the AP rankings came out yesterday, Wisconsin is a better team than Ohio State. So, you know, you just have to look at that. Arizona State, so Herm Edwards last night at practice, the Sun Devils start a week from Saturday against UT San Antonio. Last night he said as many as 15 freshmen could play. It is such an indictment on what has happened under the previous few recruiting classes of Todd Graham that 15 freshmen. I was telling you guys earlier this week, the NFL folks are telling me there's 9 potential NFL players on the Sun Devil roster. 9. That's nothing in this day and age. And we all know N'Keal Harry's one of them. You only have 9 NFL caliber guys, so of course he's going to play 15 true freshmen. I've never heard of a number that big. So I was out of practice the other night, and I wanted to talk to Manny Wilkins about his view of the team, where they are coming into the opener, and also his view of what he likes most about this team. This was Manny earlier out of practice with myself.
I feel great. We have some ways to go. I think as a group, as a team, I mean, there's just a lot we can get better at. If a team says they are where they want to be right now, they're wrong and they're mistaken. Every week there's an opportunity to learn something new and grow from it. And I think that's what this team is doing a good job of, is taking it day by day, relaxing and letting the game come to us.
What do you like most about this team, where you are right now?
Just don't talk a lot. I mean, we jab at each other on the field or whatever, but, you know, we're not on Twitter talking about what we're going to do. We're not, you know, boasting about what we're doing at practice, posting practice film. You know, that's what people that are insecure do, and they want people to look at me type thing. So this team just has a mindset of just shut up and go to work, and that's what I like.
Now, when he says that the team has a habit of not talking about things, I think that's good. I think it's him being out on the field and being in complete control of the situation. But is he taking a shot at the U of A? Because they have been very much active on social media, the U of A has. So I thought that was some interesting comments there from Manny Wilkins. Again, the opener against UT San Antonio a week from Saturday, and everybody's looking to the Michigan State game. I get it, but you've got to get through the first week. And Herm's going to say stuff. Herm's going to be interesting. ASU is far more interesting today than they were a year ago under Todd Graham. Nothing personal, Todd Graham. It's just the narrative last year was, we hope we can get to El Paso or a bowl game. Nobody wants to go to El Paso. No offense, those of you at the Sun Bowl. That's not acceptable. You want to aim for places like Atlanta and Orlando and New Orleans. Yeah, you don't, and Pasadena. Nobody aims for El Paso for a bowl game. Drives me crazy. The Cardinals, tomorrow we'll have quite a bit on the Cardinals in Dallas as the preview towards the third preseason game. And the Mercury last night, Diana Taurasi went absolutely nuts. She played great, and they won in their playoff game. Tonight, Rising FC is at home, and that's what's going on in my mind. Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do it through life insurance, guys. As I've said, just log on. Simple to do. Get your free quote online at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Kent Summers on the couch after this timeout. All right, on this week's edition of the Sports Media Podcast, of course, I love doing this. It's Kent Summers. Kent Summers, who I've seen, known, sat next to, seen him from afar, do his thing through the years with AZ Central Sports, is now the new columnist over at AZ Central, along with Greg Moore. And Kent is nice enough to come in studio to talk about the job. We will talk about the Cardinals and all this, but first and foremost, when did this start to roll where you're thinking, I'm actually going to be the columnist?
I didn't allow myself to think of it as that. It started, Dan Bickley left in April, position opened, threw my name, said, emailed my boss, I'm interested, had some interviews along the way, and, like most things in our business, things proceed slowly.
Mm-hmm. Titanic.
So, not really knowing what the plan was, and I got a call. I was in on vacation in Connecticut, and my son's lives there in mid-July, and they said, do you want the job? And I said, of course. So, but it's been I've always said, I wrote this for my first column with the Republic. It's on my annual review forever. When they said, ultimately, what's your career goal? I said, I would love to be a columnist. And I wrote that for like 30-something years.
So, How many years has it been?
I've been at the Republic 33 years.
33 years, and from a columnist style standpoint, who's impacted you most?
Ooh. I've worked with some really good ones along the way. I mean, we had some really good ones at the paper, starting off with, old-timer Bob Hurt, mm-hmm. kind of an old-school columnist who knew everybody. I remember going to a Final Four with him, and, he sees old coaches there, they stop and talk to him. So him, then David Cass Stevens comes mm-hmm. to town. I always admired David's writing. I worked with Dan Bickley for years. We traveled together with the Cardinals. But I've always tried to read people all across mm-hmm. the country and the different styles. Everybody from Art Thiel in Seattle to Ray Ratto in the Bay Area mm-hmm. to Mark Wicker in Los Angeles and Gene Collier in Pittsburgh, all those guys.
What makes a good columnist, Kent, from your point of view?
I like to be somebody who not informs but also entertains. Mm-hmm. But I think there has to be some reporting in a column. I think you have to have some connections and some, information, I think, is important. But I think having a sense of humor and a writing style, and
it's not brain surgery, it's sports.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah,
it's sports, but and especially the ability today to, to analyze, to put something in perspective, because, everybody knows the score immediately, people are watching the game, they're often doing something on a second screen and watching, and keeping up with commentary that way, so to take it a little bit further and to maybe explain why something happened. And I also think I like columnists who are occasionally funny, who mm-hmm. who write humor. I think, sometimes our section over the years has gotten at times to be humorless, when we sort of did away with a page two column and Bob Young did a great job on it. Yeah, yeah, Bob moved to a different department and we kind of lost something there. Not that you want to be a smart aleck in the paper every day, but
I do think it helps though. Like, Alan Malamud and Nick Canepa were two people that I grew up having on as guests, admiring. Nick would slap me upside the head in San Diego. And I think Alan, I would always rip open to see what he had to say and find something. Doug Krikorian back in the day for really throwing names around. The late Joe Gil Martin told me once that some days you have to bring the sledgehammer, some days you have to bring the fly swatter. The key of being a columnist is when to bring those out.
Yeah.
And so in this market with all these teams, do you see the sledgehammer, fly swatter approach from your point of view?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I've watched, having been in this market for so long, I've thought of things. That's a good column right there. That's a good column for a sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. Or this would be a good column to kind of stick the needle in a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. I mean, some of the things the Suns have done, for instance, over the years, you could bring the sledgehammer. Obviously, with the
Cardinals. Don't know if it'll impact them at all.
Obviously, with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Over, there's a time and place for that, for sure.
No, I think, the Suns haven't had a playoff game since May 29th, 2010. That's the last day they had a playoff game. And I don't know if it matters to Robert Sarver. So, in your space, do you reach out to him at some point? Do you go through the PR channels? Do you just show up? here I am, and let's.
Yeah, I think
what's your process
as their season starts. I think they open camp, you know, September 24th, something like that. I would like to go out there. That's a great time to get to know people. Obviously, I don't think you bring out the sledgehammer when you don't know somebody and they don't know who you are. And I also think it's important to show up to those events after you've taken that out and, you know, and be accountable.
When you had a famous back and forth with Derek Anderson, you're not afraid to dust it up and hold your own ground. If you were to talk about some of those tough situations that you've been in for the audience through the years, would that be near your top of the list?
Yeah, that would be near the top of my list. That one, you know, it's so different today because that one went public. So many times as a beat writer, you know, disagreements or if people have issues with what you've written, it's handled in private. You don't air those things out. I don't know that readers really want to.
To know all that.
I mean, I remember Bruce Snyder chewing me out when I covered Arizona State football and they had a players in legal trouble. And, you know, after a practice, he said, does every story of yours has to go back and chronicle every kid here who's been in trouble? And you're able to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now it's, you know, like the Derek Anderson thing when that blew up after that Monday night game and the against the 49ers, I was just thinking in my head, just like, oh, this is going to be all over, you know, tomorrow.
Which is not tonight. Your intention. People in this day and age think it's our intention or your intention.
Here's the difference in that, and it really illustrates how social media has impacted what we do, is during that game, and they're getting beaten badly by the 49ers, and, you know, and they showed Derek Anderson and Deuce Latuhi laughing on the sideline. John Gruden says something about it.
Right.
So I'm getting tweets from people about it. Why are these guys laughing? And it became an issue, and somebody had to ask Derek Anderson about it after the game, you know. And I you know, because that was the topic for the Cardinals. That was the storyline. So that kind of impacts what you do, social media, for sure.
Has the phone rung at 2 a.m. from someone upset with you or an organization or an owner?
No. Probably the last call I got at 2 a.m. work-related was when I covered Arizona State. We were between beat writers, and they put me on the beat for a couple of weeks, and it was during the whole point shaving thing. And Vegas took that game off the board or the red flags, and Bill Frieder called me at 1 a.m. and he goes, do you think this happened? Do you think my guys shaved points? What? I mean, he was beside himself trying to figure it out. So, but no, I don't get too many of those calls.
I got one because I was a color analyst on that team with Tom Dillon. Mm-hmm. Tom did the games, and we just looked at each other and said, this team's really not good. And I got a 1 a.m. from Doug Tamaro, who, for those listening, longtime sports information director. He's like, hey, there's a lot of stuff out there tonight, just so you know, that's coming down. We had just gotten off a plane.
Yeah.
I think it was from Seattle. I think it was the Pullman-Seattle trip. And, you know, that story is one that, in this day and age of social media, that would have been covered in a completely, completely different way. Who are you most looking forward to sitting down then and visiting with? Because primarily you have been on the Cardinals, not primarily, that's been your thing. And now you have the ability to go stretch out in any direction you want. There may be somebody completely off the radar, but there may be somebody that you're like, you know, from a distance, I've always wanted to sit with this person. I know you wrote on Devin Booker a while back.
Right.
But
and I've barely been around the Suns over the years, so I think it's interesting with the new coach. I'd like to talk to Robert Sarver and ask him some of the things we're talking about. Does it really matter? You know, how much does it matter to you that you haven't been in a playoff game since 2010. I've enjoyed, you know, going out to the Diamondbacks a little bit, meeting Torrey Lovello and Mike Hazen. I have interest in delving into high school athletics, and from time to time. And as a father of three kids, and one of them who did sort of the club basketball scene for a year or two, that whole dynamic fascinates me, often for, you know, not very positive reasons.
Yeah, so, you'll need a shower when you get done with that.
Yeah, and increasingly so.
One of your more memorable columns or stories, I think I told you this at the time, was your last game for your son that you wrote about, and how you wrote about the drive, and I got choked up. And it was even then, I was like, this guy should be doing more than just the NFL, because, you know, I feel as though that we sometimes in our industry get so caught up in it's got to be pro, rather than what's just going on around you.
Right.
What is the kid next door doing? You know.
Yeah, and I believe in all that corny stuff that what athletics or really any activity can do for kids coming up, whether it's band or football or any of that stuff. That was a rule, you know, my wife and I had in the house. You know, you don't have to play sports, but you have to do something. Mm-hmm. You're not coming home at 2:30 every day and, you know, sitting on the couch. You're going to do something for your school, with your school, in the community, something. And, you know, and they, I think it's made a difference.
Yeah.
In their lives. And so I like to tell those kind of stories. I mean, we have one of the best prep writers in the country, and Richard Obert, who, you know, I'm going to have to really work hard to get a story he hasn't already covered.
So. The space that you're in now, are you, from a process standpoint, are you allowed to just call in and say, this is what I'm doing? Do they collaborate with you? Take us through the process of how you decide you're going to do a column.
It's a collaboration. It really is. You know, when the Cardinals opened camp, you know, they told me we'd like you out there a lot. We would like you to do a lot of football heavy columns at first, but after that, it's sort of up to you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, every, you know, I've only been in it a month, but it's sort of like, you know, the same process as when I was on the beat. I'd email my boss or we would talk Sunday or Monday and say, here's what I have in mind for the week. You know, mm-hmm. like this week, for instance, I, you know, would like to write a Cardinals column based on the first two games. And then the Diamondbacks returned to town Tuesday after being out of town for 9 games. So, you know, like to go hit that. I have a piece that I'm working on about Herm Edwards really delving into analytics, and mm-hmm. ASU has hired a firm that, you know, has really studied it, and, you know, and Herm has said, look, you're going to see me going for it on 4th and 1 from midfield occasionally. It's going to be different. It's going to be bold. So all those kind of things. So I'll email my boss at the first of the week or talk to him and say, here's what I have in mind. What are your ideas? He may throw out a couple of other things, or he might say, I like this a lot, and that not so much. That's how it's worked so far.
That's how it's worked.
And there's a lot of autonomy, though. Both the way it's worked, it's same way with Greg Moore, our other columnist, myself. I think Dan Bickley had a ton of freedom to come up with his own ideas.
Will you go get on a plane?
Yeah, the plan right now is to go to every Cardinals game. The beat writer, Bob McManaman, and I will go to those games. Like to go to some ASU and cover some ASU events. I hope, you know, that I'll have the freedom to, if I see a good story that has an Arizona angle, even if it's go to Seattle mm-hmm. or go somewhere like that. I mean, back in the day, you know, Rick Neuheisel, who's from McClintock High, became the coach at Washington. And we, you know, I flew up there and did a big story on Rick Neuheisel. Those are the kind of stories I'd like to do. A couple years ago, I went to Minneapolis and spent, you know, a couple of days with Larry Fitzgerald, you know, going around his old neighborhood. And those are some of the great stories I'd like to continue to do and involve some travel.
How do you handle the process of a team that is not viewed as one of the most followed in terms of social media? And I'll use the Coyotes as an example. I think Arizona State basketball was there. I think that's completely changed now with Bobby Hurley. People are always probably going to be hitting you up or the paper up, say you need to do something on us. How do you handle that process?
That's good. I haven't had it to go through it yet. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to weigh because you have to gauge what's popular. What do most people want to read about? But yet again, you can't ignore another sport. You can't ignore Arizona State women's basketball with Charlie Turner Thorne. There'd be some great stories mm-hmm. there. And yeah, is that going to get a ton of page views? Probably not, but it's a good story. MLS coming here. We were talking about that earlier. Great story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't all have to be ASU football, Cardinals, Suns, etc.
The way that you process your week, you touched on it earlier, and I keep going back to process. A lot of people listen to this podcast. They like to hear how you decide on a story.
do you go to some of your co-writers, some of your beat writers, boots on the ground, and say, I'm looking for something? Do you go to PR people? Do you go within your sources of an organization? How do you go about finding those stories? That's a commonly asked question.
A little bit of everything. I know as a beat writer, there are certain, you know, there are always things that come up that, like, okay, this would be a better column than a story. This begs for an opinion, you know, and as a beat writer, mm-hmm. I can't really bring that. So I would suggest, talking to Dan Bickley or whomever, you know, this, you might want to get at this. There's something here. So I've already, you know, it's Scott Bordeaux, our son's writer. I talked to him and he goes, you know, you really ought to do something on Devin Booker and the new contract and what's his next step. And I did that column. I think as a columnist, you have to be smart enough to know that your beat writers can make or break you, and especially make you, mm-hmm. and come up with good ideas or have that relationship.
Talk about that.
Well, the same. If you have, they are with these people every day. Mm-hmm. You know, and it goes back to what I was saying with the Cardinals. It's like, you know, I would have ideas, and it's like, you know, this really needs to be in the paper or on the website, and it doesn't really fit, you know, what a reporter does. It fits more as a column. And the beat writers are there every day. And sometimes you just have to show up. Sometimes you show up and you just, okay, I'm not writing today.
Yep.
Or I don't really have an idea today.
I firmly believe in that.
Yeah, it's showing up's a big thing.
Too often it's just put it in the back pocket and just forget about it.
Yeah, don't put the pressure
on yourself.
One of my favorite singers, Jason Isbell, has a line about, you know, avoiding the temptation to live inside your phone.
Yeah,
you know,
no, that's good.
And I'm guilty of that. It's like, you know, I can't even get on my kids for telling them to put their phone away, and they just roll their eyes like, you're the worst offender. But yeah, it was like the Herm Edwards analytics idea I had. I just went out to ASU and took a tour of their new facility, and he came out of the office out of a meeting, and we talked, and he talked a little bit about that. So it's like, oh, there's an idea.
He's going to be must-see, I think. After
what a
games.
Story. It's a grand, it's just this grand experiment.
Sure.
And it's garnered so much criticism nationwide, and I get that, but yet all those same people are still covering that story. He's compelled. I was out there on the, night where the ESPN crew had followed him around the whole day. Now he's normally animated, but people who know him were there, and it's like, he knows the cameras are here, you know, so it's going to be a great story to cover. And you know, Brad, that's what people ask me all the time. Do you root for teams to win? Do you root for this? And it's kind of a cliche on my part. It's like, I root for the good story to tell. I want the good story to tell. If that's, you know, somebody going, the Cardinals going to the Super Bowl when nobody ever saw that, if that's a big disaster of a game where two guys are yucking it up in the fourth quarter and a blowout loss to the 49ers, I root for the stories.
I remember going to Cleveland. You were probably there. And it was a buddy team, and they lost 50-3 or something like that. And I'm sitting there like, okay, we wasted all this jet fuel. We wasted all this time, meals, hotel, rental car, for this. Like, what are we doing here, guys?
There's some theories among beat writers about what the best season to cover is, you know, and one of my friends says the best team to cover is an 8-8 team that's just good enough not to get the coach fired. So you have mediocrity and you don't have a coaching search, but that's the perfect year. I always thought it was a 4-12 disaster season, that there were a ton of stories to tell in those seasons, or the 12-4 team that was really good and was going somewhere and, you know, and galvanized a community, and people really wanted to read your stuff.
The business side of sports, and we'll get to the Cardinals after this, the business side of sports with these owners, the buildings that are going on behind the scenes right now, whether it is the Coyotes or if it is the Diamondbacks or if it is the Suns, it seems to me that we're seeing this mushroom cloud about to hit of new building and owners looking for ways to get buildings funded, which is not ever popular, but it's coming. And I'm curious your view of the facilities question here and how you take the stances on that.
I just don't see how they're going to get public money.
I don't either.
I don't see. I mean, they've already taxed hotel rooms. They've taxed taxpayers. They've, you know, rental cars. And the thing is, if you get a new building, what happens to Chase Field? What?
U of A facility, U of A campus, from what I've heard. I've heard that the, U of A and the U of A and ASU have both looked at that and said, we're in. If you're Robert Sarver, U of A, ASU have looked at that and said, we're in. But that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, my view is they're still going to be at the 101, 202. That's the epicenter. They get their Southeast Valley traffic that they don't get. You're on the west side. You probably don't buy into that conversation. But I still think 101, 202 is where they're ending up.
That's. I mean, I always thought that the stadiums should be there or should be downtown, not...
You covered Rio Salado.
I covered that whole thing. Yep. And, you know, people complain about the city of Glendale and the hockey arena and da-da-da-da. I'm like, well, they were the only entity stepping up at that time, you know, for both the Cardinals and the Coyotes. I think it's going to be a real challenge to get, for any of these teams to get a new facility. I mean, I'd be very surprised. But you look around the country, you know, the Rangers are moving in to a new stadium, out of a stadium that's 20, 25 years old maybe. The Braves have done it. Atlanta's a great place to study because there was nothing wrong with, really, the Georgia Dome. And now it's, you know, gone, and then the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is up. The Braves moved from...
It's got issues, right? The stadium, the roof's got issues.
Yeah, I think they finally figured it out. They finally can open and close it
down. The soccer team is selling out down there. Yeah. The Hawks are an afterthought. But no, that is a good comparison, Morgan. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Kent Summers. All things, he joins us here on the Football AZ Show. Columnist with AZ Central Sports. Your view of the Cardinals 2 weeks, two preseason games in. What do you like?
The offense has been a little bit better than I thought it was going to be. Now we'll see if that holds. I think parts of the offensive line have looked better. I really like the way Mike Iupati has played. Mm-hmm. He's playing like he did when he was a Pro Bowler for the 49ers.
Got the fire back.
The fire back. And David Johnson looks healthy. I still have some questions if there are enough weapons there around him. I don't know if the receivers behind Larry Fitzgerald, can Sam Bradford stay healthy for a season? And so far, really, all we've seen Sam Bradford do is short, quick passes. Completion percentage is great, but I just still a believer in the NFL. At some point, you've got to get some big shots down the field. It's too hard to move 80 yards consistently, grind it out, and score enough points to win a game. Defensively, I liked the first game. I thought it was a step back last week, even though they got a bunch of turnovers. I thought they were fortunate to get those turnovers. I didn't like the way the front four played at all. I thought the Saints blew them off the ball and were able to run the ball.
Kim Dichie gets
hurt again. Overall, though, I like what I see and what I hear about Steve Wilks. I think they picked the right guy. Mm-hmm. I like the way he goes about his business. You can see he commands a respect of the players, and I think he's got a good staff around him. I think the change was needed there.
I was going to ask you about that.
I was
the fire gone in Bruce? And
I don't know if the fire had gone, or if the players had heard all the jokes and all the. I do know, you know, there were too many friends of his on staff. There should have been changes made, especially special teams coordinator who. Mm-hmm. You know, Amos Jones lasted this whole time only because he was close friends with Bruce. I think there's a danger in that, hiring your friends and buddies and then you don't make changes when you need to. But I think the whole organization, and I talk to employees just on background, and there's a little more juice and enthusiasm, even though, you know, no one around the country is expecting much from them.
Right. David Johnson, should he be sitting here without a new deal in place, given where Todd Gurley is and Le'Veon Bell? As a columnist, what's your view on that?
I think it'll get done. I do. I think
highest number.
No, I wouldn't pay him more than Todd Gurley. I mean, Todd Gurley's had, you know, more than one excellent season, but I do think David should be close, just under that.
Where is the competition at quarterback from your view between Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen? Mine is, it's no debate right now.
Right.
Sam Bradford's the guy. It's what everybody has said. It's not a matter of if, but when he goes down, grabs his knee. But is Rosen showing you more here in camp?
I thought there would be a legitimate competition, at least. I mean, I've always thought Bradford would be the starter, but I thought Rosen would look a little bit better in practice in camp than he has and make this closer than he has. And that's not to say he's a disappointment. I mean, I think he's immensely talented, and I enjoy being around the kid. He's very smart and outspoken, and I hope people in the organization don't take that away from him. Right now, he seems to know his place as a rookie, and he's not going to say very much. I'm very interested to see when he does become the starter, if we'll see the Josh Rosen we saw at UCLA. I hope so.
There was a little bit of, I wrote a note about, he's a punky QB. It's just, I covered Jim McMahon when Jim blew his nose on TJ and Clark Judge and all that stuff. And I'm hearing him the other day out at practice, and it's, okay, yeah, I don't really like that question. Yeah, I'm not really sure I like that question. Okay, got it.
What I think too is as he develops a relationship with certain reporters and beat writers, and I think when he says things like that, I think it's almost incumbent upon the beat writer to say, you know, that was a good question. And kind of go back and forth, because I think that's what Rosen really wants. And, you know, I've had friends of his and people who know him or close to him said, he loves to argue. He likes to debate.
Mm-hmm. He's a thinker.
One person said, I've had these huge debates with him at night. He'll take this stand and that stand, and we'll, like, go at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it'll be this impassioned argument. And then the next morning, you know, Rosen will go, you know, you were right about that last night. And the guy's like, why did we spend all that energy doing that? But that's what he likes. So I think he's perfectly happy with somebody saying, that's a good question. Or
I'm calling nonsense.
Or what about
that.
This? Yeah, call him on it.
You've seen Larry Fitzgerald since day one. Is there any reason to believe that Larry Fitzgerald is slowing down, even here in camp, from your view?
No, I think he's the same guy. I haven't seen him slow down. I mean, over the years, he's slowed down, certainly. But it's still, you still see at times in practice, he catches the ball and there's a gear there you didn't think existed. And I think he's, you know, the little bit of, I've been around him at camp, he's enjoying this.
He gave you a hard time when you got the job.
Always, yeah.
He's one of those rare birds that you can just look at and say, he's going to give it to you.
Yeah.
He's comfortable. He'll give it to anybody. It doesn't matter
in
this space.
Exactly.
And if he drops five balls, he knows you're, not that he's done that, but he knows that the hammer's coming.
Yeah, right? And we did that over the years. You know, that's early in his career in Tampa Bay, he inexplicably ran out of bounds after a catch. And we're asking him about it after the game, and he really didn't have an explanation. So we all hammered him about that. You know, he's been a fascinating guy to cover. He's a very curious person. And, you know, if he were here with you, he would ask you about this whole operation and want to know every detail. And then if you turn to him and say, well, what do you think about, you know, playing again in 2019 for $11 million? Clam up.
Yeah.
He would not, you know, he doesn't want to reveal very much about himself.
No. He, off topic, but we did a sit down and he talked about his entertainment and musicians and magicians company. And I found that to be 100 times more interesting than catching balls.
Right.
You know, why do you own Mail and More's in Minneapolis? I mean, what is the point of that?
Like, yeah.
Like, really? Mail and More's? I never knew.
Yeah. Why do you do USAA insurance ads?
Yes.
Or what was this visa shoot like?
Right,
and what,
right.
Yeah. And that's what was fascinating about going back to his hometown and just meeting people who knew him when. You know, who caught him cutting class and called his mom and said, hey, he's not in school where he should be. Or talking to his high school coach and saying, you know, Larry didn't graduate from this high school. He thought he could turn on the smile and the charm and the teachers would pass him, and it didn't happen.
Mm. What happens with Steve Keim?
As we talk, I think he's back at work. I think he's back. He's due back August 21st. I think he'll be at his desk at 5 a.m. August 21st.
Any lasting damage?
Yeah, I think, you know, in this day and age, you know, that's going to live with him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are already making jokes. The next bad signing or bad draft pick he makes. Well, you know what people are going to say. Is he drinking again?
Yeah.
You know, the video, for the body cam video and reporting to jail. That's going to be out there, just, you know, for his kids to see. And he might do this, but I've thought of this, is that, you know, I think he probably has to address the team, address the players, stand in front of them and say.
Does he address the media on it?
I think he has to do that, too.
I think he does. And I think both ways.
I think he will. I don't know when that will be. They're in a tricky situation because he's not supposed to have contact with anybody from the team, mm-hmm. except I think obviously Michael Bidwell will check to see that he's met, you know, the counseling sessions and done all the other things to come back after the five-week session. But I don't think their media relations people have been in contact with him and said, okay, you know, on the 21st or 22nd, we're going to have a press conference here. I don't think that's been scheduled yet, but I would think he does. I mean, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be the smart thing? Otherwise, you're going to get asked about it and asked about it and asked about it.
And if you don't address it, then it's, okay, what are we hiding here?
Yeah, what are you hiding? And you can't just come out with a statement.
No.
You can't just come out with another statement.
No. Michael Bidwell, you have seen him rise through the years. You've been out there for all these years. And, Ken, it used to be the narrative on the Cardinals was, from at least fans, they're cheap, they don't know what they're doing, the team is not good, they're this, they're that. There were some truths to all of that, I think. But I think in seeing Michael through the years, he's really risen up to the challenge. I may be wrong, and it may be all outside window dressing. Your view, because you've been out there, you're in the columnist seat now, what's your view of Michael Bidwell and the job that he's done?
I've always thought this, that he's so much different from his father. And I get along well with Bill Bidwell. But he often ran the team for his own amusement. He would do things the opposite of what everybody thought he should do, mm-hmm. just because he wanted to tweak somebody. My theory is Michael grew up in St. Louis when the Bidwell name was not widely regarded. They were cheap, they didn't want to win, people didn't like Bill Bidwell, and I think that bothered Michael Bidwell a lot. I think he's very competitive, and I think that's the fire that burns in him, is that, you know, I'm going to change this. I'm going to get a stadium, and we're going to win, and I'm going to spend money.
You ever talk to him about it?
Yeah, not so much. He won't come out, and other people won't come out and say that mm-hmm. exactly, you know, but they don't shoot that theory down mm-hmm. either. I think, you know, what's interesting to me watching it as a beat writer over the years, too, is he deserves credit for it, and he wants the credit for it. There's a reason Ken Wisenhunt, Bruce Arians, Steve Keim, and Steve Wilks always mention Michael Bidwell in press conferences and what Michael has done, and Michael's allowed us to do this. He's a hands-on owner, and he wants to be seen as a person who is responsible for turning around one of the worst organizations in sports.
Whenever the victory speech is made, Michael's always in the shot.
He's in the shot. There's a reason.
Every game. Right.
There's a reason that, you know, NFL films, you know, when they followed the Cardinals, that was a Michael Bidwell sort of production. Bruce Arians did not want to do that. Steve Keim did not want to do that. Michael Bidwell wanted to do that.
Yeah. And it's fine if we know that. I mean,
it's fine. And Michael Bidwell was in it a lot.
Yes. Yes. It's fine. I just think he deserves more credit than probably a lot of people that have been in the market for many, many years are willing to give him, even with the Super Bowl, even with they win more than they lose. There still is just this stigma that doesn't seem to leave.
It doesn't. I think it's dissipated some, though. I do. And looking back, for him to get that team a stadium, to lead that charge,
it was great.
After all the failed efforts and never being successful on the field, I still marvel that they were able to do that, and by the narrowest of margins, but they got taxpayers to pony up, and they figured out a way to get a new stadium built, because where they were at the time as an organization, it was a huge accomplishment, maybe one of the, you know, one of the top three or four accomplishments in sports history, really, in Phoenix, I think.
I appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Brad.
Good stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Good
Always
job.
A pleasure.
Ken Summers with us, sports360az.com. Of course, on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sismat, Football AZ, back with more after this timeout.
Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, sports, off the field, on the field. And this week we're going to lighten the load a little bit. As the start of the new school year is underway, it is time to focus in on the Havocs. Of course it is. The Havocs voted one of the best, in many spaces, the best student group that gets out. The fan base of the students are absolutely nuts, are absolutely bananas. And this week we have Shelby Langston, GCU co-president of the Havocs. That is quite a title for you, Shelby. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. So how'd you become a Havoc? Let's just get right to the heart of the matter here.
Yeah, so my freshman year, I joined the Havocs. I knew about the student section. So I got involved with it just as a student, as a member. And then my sophomore year, I applied to be a Havocs leader and actually made it, which was super exciting. And now I've been involved with it for 4 years, and I love it. It's how I met all of my friends. All my friends do it. It's great.
Your first event, do you remember it well when you were a Havoc and you're like, wow, this is really happening to me? Kind of like a first time going on Space Mountain or something, I'm sure.
Yeah, my first event would have been a soccer game back in my freshman year. And I remember that was how I met so many people. And it was back. It's actually our practice field now. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've put in the big soccer stadium, but we all used to stand on the track. And I mean, that's just how you got connected.
The idea, Shelby, of the duty of being a Havoc. What does the duty require? You know, if there's a mom or dad that's watching this right now, or a prospective student that's saying, or even a GCU current student saying, I want to get plugged in to be a Havoc. What is the duty of a Havoc?
Honestly, the duty of a Havoc is to, and it's going to sound kind of cheesy, but it really is just to have fun and support the Lopes. Like, it's how you can get connected, and that's the main purpose of it, is to give students somewhere to meet people, something to do with their roommates and suite mates, and also so that they feel a sense of ownership and pride, because when the team wins, it's not just for them. You know, the students really feel a part of that.
You have to have certain, I don't know, you have to be a little off to be a Havoc, don't you? I don't mean that disrespectfully, but you have to... you kind of have to just be happy and cheerful and let's go for it. And if you're going to sit around and be Charlie Brown with the cloud over your head, that's not going to work, right?
I mean, I would say it's a spectrum for sure. You'll catch us out at tennis matches, and tennis isn't the one where you want to be screaming at someone. You know, that's more of your, you'll be sitting there and chirp when you can at the other team. But then basketball for sure, that's when everybody goes wild and gets crazy. I mean, one of my friends got caught on World Star for eating a pineapple and just went viral off of that. So absolute, I mean, the spectrum is just across the board.
Okay, let's practice eating the pineapple, because it'll go viral. Get ready for your game on Thursday night. What is the funnest is not really a word, but when you think of a memorable event for you so far in being a Havoc, what would it be? A game, a moment, something you did? Were you the person that dressed up as the panda? I don't know. I mean, give me something that has been memorable for you.
The panda is one of my good friends, actually.
Of course
it
is.
But a memorable moment for me would be my sophomore year. We played Louisville at home.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely crazy, you know, being just this team that isn't even tournament eligible and contesting with Louisville the entire game, if not leading at some point. You know, it was just, it was what no one expected from us.
We're talking with Shelby Langston. She is the Havocs co-president. This week on Talk to the Lopes, having a little bit of fun, lightening the load as we start the new year. On a serious side, you're part of the Colangelo School of Business, correct?
I am, yes.
And you're in the Honors College, from what I've heard, correct?
Yes, that is also correct.
And what do you plan to do with it when you're done at GCU?
I've really been trying to figure that out. I love being in athletics. I help run the Havoc social media account, and I absolutely love that side of it. I've also started to look into marketing tech tools, which is a really interesting field and something that's more of an IT side, interestingly enough, but I just find it so intriguing and something that I enjoy learning.
So it's really not work, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I love marketing. I love just that entire side of it.
The Colangelo School of Business, have you met Jerry Colangelo?
I have met Jerry Colangelo. I've actually been at a couple of events he did. He was here talking to some students in the arena and just giving us some insight into the sports world, mm-hmm. and especially the sports world in Arizona and how that works in business. And then also there was the opening of the Jerry Colangelo Museum, which was completely an honor to be a part of and to see the legacy that he has in sports business.
That's cool. I was at that event, and it was very, very well done. Around campus, the Colangelo School of Business and what you've been able to accomplish, do you think that you've made an impact on other students saying, hey, I want to do what Shelby's doing?
I hope I have. I really hope that I've made an impact on students. I mean, I didn't get into this so that I could just benefit myself. I wanted other students to find a sense of ownership in the Havocs and also to find a place of belonging in it. And I think it has inspired some students to want to impact the campus in the same way. I mean, you get a unique reach of up to 4,000 students, just that you get to touch their lives and hopefully make their college experience better. And it's really special.
And to be a Havoc, is there an initiation, or do you just sign a form? Do you just show up and they say, get involved? I mean, how difficult is it to get into the Havoc Club?
Every student is already a Havoc the second that they become a student. We do have all-access Havocs, and those are the people who want to guarantee that they'll get into every men's basketball game because those tickets are in such high demand. Mm-hmm. So they join on October 7th. That's when they sign up to become an all-access Havoc. They get all of their gear. And, I mean, people just, they're really proud of it when they get to do that and become a part of that crazy, crazy group of Havocs.
One last question on this. So it's not just students, right? Do you have like an 80-year-old Havoc, a 90-year-old Havoc, or do you just have to be a student? Because this looks kind of fun for anybody of any age that just says, you know what? Like, I've covered the Diamondbacks for years. There's a lady that just shows up and she waves flags. Mm-hmm. Why? Because she just likes to wave flags. Of course she does.
Yeah.
I mean, is this just a student thing, or do you have people that have reached out to you and said, you know, I'm retired. This looks kind of fun. I want to be young again. Do you have senior Havocs? I don't know.
It is just the students in the student section, so the Havocs part of it. We have alumni who get super into it, and they'll do some of the moves that we do, some of the dances. They'll get into it. Some students have actually snuck their parents into the student section or their little siblings. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pictures where you'll catch like a 5-year-old in there.
That's awesome.
And a student like holding her up so she can see the game. But yeah, I mean, if they want to sneak in and stand up with us, more power to them.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, look, I appreciate the time and the insight on being a Havoc and having a little bit of fun. Shelby, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sure. There's Shelby Langston, and that's so cool. That is this week's Talk to the Lopes.